The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, Man United back again against assorted Greek characters. They dealt a crushing blow and now have half a chance in the competition. Next, though, can they beat a Hammers side featuring Andy Carroll? It would be a mega result. Elsewhere, Chelsea, Eto with a goal for all of SW3. Next up for them, Arsenal, the voyeur, specialist in failure. Can Wenger shove those words right back down Jose's throat? There's a word from abroad, Sid on the Clasico, Rafa on the Bundesliga, Barry on a big night in Dublin, and more in this Football Weekly Extra. Thanks, Dublin. Yes, here we are, back at Guardian Central. Barry Glendening, James Horncastle, and Raphael Honigstein. We've just been on quite a journey together. A journey, wouldn't you say, Rafa?
I would say, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Anyway, we had a terrific night out. If you were there in Dublin, thanks. If you weren't, there's a little bit of an excerpt later on, at the end of today's show. You know, just some of the, you know, just some bits that Ben's put together.
To pad it out now that we're back in the studio for that difficult second pod.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Two pods in 2 days.
There's no adulation here.
No.
It's tough being on tour.
It is. It is, actually.
Yeah.
Anyway, luckily, there's no shortage of stuff to talk about, Barry, because while we were there in Dublin, good old Man United, they came back, didn't they? Is this the Mark Robbins moment, is it?
I think it's a bit early to say it's the Mark Robbins moment. Only time will tell.
Right.
Yeah, I hate to put a dampener on your excitement, but it's certainly a step in the right direction and much needed. I think if they'd gone out last night, that probably would have been the job slipping away from David Moyes for once and for all.
Yeah.
And now he's at least given himself a sporting chance. And, you know, people are talking about them just getting into the next round. No one's actually, that I've read or seen or heard yet, suggested the notion that Manchester United could conceivably win the competition.
Well, David Moyes has.
Okay, me and David Moyes, no delusions there.
Let's not understate their achievement last night. It's not like Olympiacos had lost all previous 11 visits to only, actually they did. Yeah. but still, when the team sheet was read out, I mean, Rather, you were going through the teams with our friends in Dublin, and they were assorted titters at some of the selections.
Yeah, Ferdinand, Giggs, Welbeck, didn't really go down very well, but most of them had a decent game. I thought United looked shaky at the back. It was a very open game, almost a throwback to days gone past where, you know, English teams would regularly just overpower the opposition, not necessarily by playing nice, intricate football, but just by sheer numbers that just came flooding forward. And Olympiacos weren't quite wise to using all that space, and they never found that killer pass.
Mm.
They never really had
that cutting
action.
They had chances galore, didn't they?
They had chances, but they didn't create enough chances from the opportunities that presented themselves, so that they missed a chance to create real chances, if that makes sense, many times. And it didn't really feel so much of a renaissance as more of a kind of maybe last hurrah. I don't know.
Really?
I wasn't that impressed.
I think United, they did what was asked in the sense that they got themselves ahead early on. And when they came under significant pressure and De Gea made that double save, they then went and scored relatively soon afterwards, and I think that was very important for them to sort of seize that moment and take the initiative away from Olympiacos. I thought for 55 minutes they did reasonably well, and then it became almost like watching England at World Cups or other major tournaments where they just get deeper and deeper and deeper, the crowd gets nervier and nervier, and they saw it out. I mean, you look at the free kick that Van Persie scored, bit soft to give it in the first place. Goalkeeper was culpable. But it's perhaps the dawn of a, not a new day, but you just worry about United with these sort of, they've had results like this so far this season.
Hmm.
Is it going to be another sort of
You mean another Crystal Palace, West Brom.
Yeah,
let's not be too churlish. They needed at least a 3-0 win, and they got it. A lot of people, though, are unconvinced out there. Letitia, is this the least comprehensive 3-0 win this season? Art Malone, have you ever seen a team 3-0 up and looking so uncomfortable? Art McGuire, was that the worst, best comeback ever in the Champions League? And Liam, with, I believe the phrase you're looking for is stay of execution. Well, quite apart from the Champions League next round, of course, they've got a big game coming up this weekend, and then another perhaps even bigger game on Tuesday. But just on the subject of the Champions League, producer Ben pointing out that when Chelsea and Liverpool, England's last teams to win that competition, were successful, in both cases their league form was pretty dire. Hmm. Not as dire as Man United's has been, but it's interesting.
Jimmy Traore won a European Cup.
Mm.
Yeah, 2005.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I think a better team than Olympiacos, who I thought were quite naive, would have put United away comfortably last night. I really thought Olympiacos should have scored, and the penalty they conceded was ridiculous. There was no need for that free kick as well, as has been pointed out. There was a major boo-boo by the goalkeeper. So I think United, in a way, were lucky, but they rode their luck, and fair play to them.
All right. Well, a big night for Robin van Persie. A hat-trick, of course, for him, which is no mean feat, and a spectacular free kick, and just generally looking the money. The problem is, what's the story on his injury? Because, of course, in classic RVP fashion, he then went out injured.
Well, David Moyes last night said it wasn't so bad. It was just a knock rather than a real injury to the joint. So a knock would suggest he's only out for a few days and maybe can be back for Saturday. I think almost, I guess, the biggest story is now, can he be fit for the Champions League? Because whatever happens in the league will, of course, have an effect on Moyes' immediate future, but doesn't really change much,
yeah,
whether they're 7th or 6th or 8th. In the grand scheme of things, almost irrelevant.
Mm. I had a West Ham chat here, but there's no real relevance now, is there? And even the derby is not really that.
Well, I mean, it's relevant in the sense that they cannot afford to lose heavily, I think it's fair to say. If both results are very bad, then the doubts will come back, and the idea that this team is not fully behind Moyes, or is not his team in many ways, will come to the forefront again. But I think the main point is that Moyes has bought himself time, because everybody now will look towards that next fixture, and if they get a big team and somehow can overcome that, then that will be seen as enough of a progress to probably see out the rest of the season, regardless of what happens in the Premier League.
Well, the draw for the last eight will be made on Friday. Chelsea also in there. The two teams, can they face each other, or they're still
can.
In? They can do. Mm-hmm. All right, Chelsea breezing past Galatasaray on Tuesday. Any relevant points you'd like to make about that fixture?
It was a very poor game that Galatasaray didn't turn up at all, and I don't think there's not a great deal to say about it.
No.
Really. They were just terrible, and sorry, someone in the comment section recently gave out to me for describing games I don't like as poor, but it was just very dull and not really worth watching, not one that'll live long in the memory, and Chelsea had a very easy ride.
Right, okay. Well, we'll look a little bit more at the Champions League situation in part two, but in the meantime, of course, Chelsea have another big game coming up this weekend where they take on Arsenal. Arsenal, who are 4 points behind them with a game in hand. So, well, if the Gunners win this. But, of course, Barry, Wenger has never beaten Jose Mourinho. Never.
Well, now would be a very good time to break that hoodoo.
Hoodoo.
Because it's must-win for Arsenal,
right,
really, isn't it? And, obviously, Wenger, while he won't admit it, I'm sure, would probably love to shove Jose Mourinho's insults at his expense back down his throat.
Well, absolutely. Never managed to beat him. And, of course, Mourinho's never lost a league game at home with Chelsea. This is Arsene Wenger's 1,000th match in charge. So it's going to be a very emotional occasion, James. Is this a good time to be facing Chelsea with, of course, the suspensions from last weekend? Ramirez out, Willian out as well.
Perhaps, but again, that might build a sort of sense of defiance in the Chelsea dressing room. I think when it comes to preparing for these big games, the mentality that this Chelsea group have, the core has, is still second to none in the league. And I always sort of back Mourinho to find a way to beat teams in these contexts. You know, for example,
or at least get a 0-0 draw.
Yeah. Something that he needs.
By last time.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Because they're great against the big teams, but slip up against the little teams, as we saw against Villa. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Arsenal, it's exactly the opposite issue, Rafa.
It would be a fantastic result if they somehow went to Stamford Bridge and got a result, but just cannot see it. I can't quite see it. I think it could well be a repeat of the first leg. The first meeting in December, when they both played out a 0-0 draw and both reasonably happy with it. Wenger needs to win if he wants to have any realistic chance of winning a championship. I'm not quite sure he still sees the championship as that realistic. And can just kind of see the game falling into a pattern where both sides would be reasonably happy not to lose. I just don't see the Gunners winning it. They haven't really shown enough adaptability in these kind of games to find the weaknesses of the really big sides and exploit them.
But it's 90 minutes. Arsenal are right there. They're up there 4 points behind. Surely they could spring a surprise, no? A goal like that stunner from Rizicki last weekend could catch Chelsea unawares, and then Chelsea without any centre-forwards, as Josie keeps reminding us, it could happen.
It could. I just feel Chelsea always find a way, and either to frustrate or to get the result that they want. And I think, yeah, that's not always the case with Arsenal. I think, yeah, looking back at last weekend, they beat Spurs in the North London derby, but it wasn't a particularly convincing performance beyond the fact that, you know, they did something that has become a cliche of Arsenal. You know, they didn't play well, they didn't have the best of it, and yet they got a 1-0 win. Mm.
It used to be a cliche about Arsenal.
It used to be, yes.
Yeah. But, well, it's nice to know that they can do that. Barry, come on then. Arsenal at Chelsea.
I don't see why they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, Arsenal on their day are a match for any side, I think, in the world. But those days are very, very hard to predict. And in the interest of making the title race, keeping it as open as possible, I'd like to see them win it. But it's difficult also to imagine Chelsea losing two on the spin in the league and losing at home. I'm slightly curious that Rafa thinks Wenger might not fancy Arsenal's chances of winning the title, because Brendan Rodgers clearly fancies Liverpool's, and they're both kind of on the same point.
So. Well, Liverpool have those a better fixture list, no? They've got those direct clashes at home with Chelsea and Man City, which is quite an influential factor, no? Do you want to?
I mean, Wenger is you're right in the sense that Wenger is the eternal optimist, and he always believes, I think, every single year that his team is good enough to win the title. But I think if he looks at it in cold, hard daylight, he'll realise that the FA Cup is by far the best avenue of winning something, and perhaps slightly more realistic. Yeah, but of course, I mean, if they get a result, even a 0-0 would keep them in the title race somewhat.
Mm.
But I mean, they've come short against the top sides so many times over the last few years. It is a pattern, and it's happened for a reason. It's not just coincidence. You wonder, with all the guys that they've out there, they've got out injured, who are really big players, who are the sort of players that can make a difference at this level. I just don't think they'll have enough.
All right. What about Fulham, eh? Fulham at Man City. Yes, Fulham. Could happen. Well, we'll skip past that one, because even with company out of the picture, and even with Fulham coming back off their mighty win last weekend against Newcastle, that looks the easiest fixture that any of the top four sides are facing. And Cardiff, and those words could come back to bite me, I know, but I'm gonna make that assumption. Cardiff-Liverpool. Now, Liverpool have won their last five games. They've won their last two matches away from home with an aggregate score of 6-0. Cardiff, I think, in their last home match, lost 4-0 against Hull, or certainly a recent one. And yet we've got people like Danny Dorco and saying, nice to see I'm not the only one who thinks Liverpool aren't just going to stroll into the Cardiff City Stadium and pick up 3 points.
Well, I think they will.
You will?
Yeah. Just, I mean, Cardiff. The problem that Cardiff have is that they need to go for it. Picking up a point is not really helping them much. So I think Liverpool are just perfectly set up to take apart teams like Cardiff, who, when they do attack without any great conviction, any real threat, and leave lots of gaps at the back. I just don't think they'll have enough for them.
All right.
And the only explanation you can find, or the only case I think you can make for Liverpool slipping up, is because they maybe take this a little bit too easily and think, you know, we just beat Man United 3-0 away.
Right.
Cardiff are not going to trouble us.
Right.
But just don't feel that kind of sense of confidence, overconfidence in this Liverpool side.
They're fresh from a 3-0 win, of course, away at Old Trafford, so they know about winning big on the road. They are 4 points, as are Arsenal, behind Chelsea, but with, like Arsenal, a game in hand. Kilcoy Trout, I remember a while back, Barry likened Brendan Rodgers to a charlatan and a seller of snake oil. Will Barry be taking back his comments now that Brendan has shown he actually seems to know what he's doing? Barry, will you take those words back?
Well, that's not true, for a start.
Oh, no, here we go.
It's not.
Did you not say that?
What I said was, and I was misquoted on some Liverpool fan forum, and now I keep getting in the neck from chippy Liverpool fans.
My lazy fan.
That what I said was, I couldn't decide whether it was a charlatan or a snake oil merchant. I was talking specifically with regard to the Being Liverpool documentary.
Ah, right.
And I said time would tell.
Yeah.
I'd also like to point out that I was full of praise for Rodgers when he was at Reading and Swansea. Mm. Liverpool fans, some of them seem to think that he's never actually managed a football team before pitching up at Anfield.
So have some of that, Kilcoy Trout. Right, good stuff. That's part one. Boom. Up next, more Champions League stuff. Right, your up-to-date, on-the-money Football Weekly Extra now reveals the identity of the eight teams in the quarterfinals. They are Man United and Chelsea, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid and Barcelona, and PSG, and Dortmund and Bayern Munich. Is everyone going to fancy Dortmund at this point, Rafa, and are they wrong to do so?
They would be wrong to do so, in my view, because Dortmund have had a lot of injuries. There'll be suspension. Lewandowski's not going to be there in the first leg. Stupid suspension for handling a ball. Marcel Schmelzer, the left back, is not going to be around. Piszczek had trouble again, the right back. Royce couldn't even play. It's just all season these injuries have caught up with them, and as a result, they're not quite this irresistible force that we saw last year in the Champions League. Having said that, on their game, they're still one of the most awkward sides to play against. But you just sense, a little bit like Atletico Madrid, that maybe they're just a little bit past their peak physically now in March. Maybe a couple of months before they would have been in a better shape. And I think it makes them more beatable than they were at this stage last season when they really turned it on big time against Real Madrid. And okay, Malaga, they got a little bit lucky before, but they had the kind of power and the physicality combined with the football, and they're just a little bit down to bare bones at the moment.
Mm, all right, interesting. Well, Schalke, of course, went out at the hands of Real Madrid, who are one of three Spanish sides in the Champions League quarterfinals. Let's hear a little bit more about the weekend they've got coming up, because, of course, there's a Clasico from Sid Lowe in España.
Hello, Jimbo. How you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you.
Great news, great news. Now, another impressive performance by that man, Ronaldo. Is he called Puskas' scoring record for Real Madrid?
Well, sort of. He has equaled Puskas. Well, I think he's overtaken Puskas, in fact. But I'm obviously a little bit uncomfortable about calling it a scoring record, because Puskas was Real Madrid's fourth highest scorer in history. So, of course, it's amazing to reach the figures that Puskas had, but that doesn't make him the top scorer in the club's history. There's still Di Stefano, Raul, and I think Hugo Sanchez ahead of him.
Oh, okay, interesting. Well, how many goals did he get the other night? Was it two?
He got two. Didn't score a hat-trick. He hit the bar in the goal that was eventually scored by Morata, who'd been looking for it all game. It's quite funny, because the ball comes down off the bar and Bale nudges it into the path for Morata to score. And as Morata is putting it in the net from a couple of yards, Cristiano Ronaldo is kind of raising his hands to the sky, moaning about the fact that his shot came back off the bar because it was a chance for a hat-trick. And, of course, the fact that he was after the goals explains why he played. And Real Madrid rested the last majority, the first team players. Bale came on, of course, because of the injury to Jesse rather than starting. Hmm. But Ronaldo is chasing that record. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think this now makes him level with Messi's record for the most goals in a Champions League season. And, of course, he's got at least two games left.
Wow. And 51 for club and country so far this season, the fourth success of the year.
It's just ridiculous how well he's playing. I mean, he really is brilliant at the moment. And he was exceptional again the other night. I must admit, though, over the two legs, that Schalke were desperately poor.
All right. Well, Sid, you mentioned the injury there too, Hesse. How serious is it?
No, it was serious. He's out for the rest of the season. It's knee ligaments. Carlo Ancelotti afterwards was saying, you know, I had this injury when I was 21, and he'll be back. But it's had a real impact, actually, because Hesse had started to... I mean, at one point, probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, because then Bale came back and started playing really well, but it started to provoke a genuine debate in Spain as to whether Jesse should play ahead of Bale. He was playing really, really well every time he came on. There was a debate, and I don't think it was a ridiculous debate at all, about whether or not he might make the Spain squad for the World Cup. So I think this has come... I mean, I heard some people in Spain the other night saying, oh, this is good timing in a way. It would have been worse at the start of the season. I think it's the worst possible timing, because it was just at the point at which Jesse was really starting to show that he's got an amazing career ahead of him, and that perhaps the World Cup would have cemented that. Perhaps he would have finished the season with Real Madrid as a starter, although for all sorts of reasons I think that probably wouldn't have happened anyway. So it's a real pity, and I think it's had probably a bigger impact than it would have had if it was other players. I think people almost feel worse because he was young and he was coming through and he was starting to show himself. And there's that doubt now as to whether this might kind of derail his entire career.
Wow. And how much does that disrupt Real's plans ahead of the Clásico? What's the mood in the two camps coming into this game?
Well, it doesn't disrupt the plans in terms of the starting 11, but I think it makes a difference to Real Madrid between now and then the season, because Jesse was the first guy to come on in virtually every game as a substitute. Very, very useful all across the line of three at the top. I think that going into the Clásico, a week ago I'd have said that Real Madrid absolutely definitely see themselves as favourites. Then, of course, last weekend they didn't play particularly brilliantly against Malaga, whereas Barcelona scored 7 against Osasuna. I think that shifted things slightly, but there's no doubt that the kind of the underlying trend in 2014, at least since the turn of the year, is that Madrid are playing much better than Barcelona. And I think there is a feeling... these things never seem to actually get then confirmed on the pitch, but I think there is a feeling that Madrid are not just favourites for this, but they could give Barcelona a bit of a going over.
Wow. And Barcelona have to win this, no? Whereas,
well, that's it, because Madrid have got a 4-point lead. Mm. So if Madrid were to win this, it would be 7 points. It would also effectively be 8 points, because if they were to win it, unless it was, I think the first game was 1-0, wasn't it, back in October? It's so far away that I can't remember now. Mm. If Madrid were to win more than 1-0, they'd then have the head-to-head advantage as well, which obviously can't now be overturned. So it'd be 7 points plus the head-to-head advantage. And I think that would be the end of the title race for Barcelona. Not, of course, for Atletico Madrid. And I feel a bit sorry for Atletico Madrid, because they're the great unremembered team this week, because everyone's talking about Madrid-Barcelona as being decisive. And it's first against third, not first against second.
All right. Sid, you going along to the Clásico?
I will be at the Clásico, yeah.
Brilliant. All right. Well, listen, enjoy it.
I shall certainly try.
Yeah, I hope it's a good one. Thanks. We'll catch up with you again on Monday, I hope.
Okay. See you then. Take care.
Thanks, Sid. Right, big game in Italy this weekend. A big game for Clarence Seedorf. Lazio are hosting Milan, and the front page of today's Gazzetta is Seedorf Berlusconi gives him 7 days.
Yes, it's quite a turbulent time for him, I think, because they've lost 4 games in a row in all competitions, which is the first time that's, I think, happened since 2006. They're well off the pace in terms of the Europa League. And on Sunday, when they were beaten by Parma 4-2, Seedorf went to meet the ultras with a delegation of players. And one of these ultras went on television last night and said that Seedorf had told them that 3/4 of the dressing room is against him.
Wow.
Which is
quite a massive surprise. So there's a quarter that's actually with him.
Which is quite the admission. And I think there is just genuine sense coming out of the club that his methods just aren't working, or are polarising in some effect. That the psychologist who he's brought back to the club, Bruno De Michelis, has tried to get him to vary his approach from being too positive all the time, you know, to actually reproach some of the players for their performances. As often happens whenever you have Balotelli in the dressing room, if you put an arm around him and make excuses for him, that doesn't often go down particularly well. So there is already talk of a perhaps Super Pippo Inzaghi, maybe.
Yeah. So Sotti's at the end of the season, then Inzaghi come in. Well, it's a big game then. Lazio this weekend, that's on Sunday. James, we should also get a slight correction on something that was said on Monday's podcast, when Philippe Clerc informed the world that woof was actually a word in
there's a Scarborough woof.
Scarborough woof. You told him.
Yeah, I'd been quite mischievous on a blizzard trip and thought I'd tell him that woof was a dogfish. It's slightly more...
Quite the banter on these blizzard trips. Yeah.
It's actually a Scottish halibut, or a wolffish.
Oh, a wolffish. So you're not that far off.
Wolf. Yeah, so it's okay. It's
didn't get up to those crazy kind of high drinks in Dublin.
We certainly didn't, yeah.
Pretty dull by comparison.
Indeed, as you can see for yourselves later on, because there's going to be a short video of Dublin, I think, available on the Guardian website. Anyway, super stuff. Let's press on, and just before we head back to the Premier League for more of the weekend's news... Rafa, is there anything from the Bundesliga, any Hoeneß updates or anything like that?
Well, two things can happen this weekend. First of all, Bayern can actually win the title. It sounds a bit crazy because they've already won the title months ago, haven't they?
Yeah. I see what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, but it can actually be mathematically over this weekend.
Mm.
If both Dortmund and Schalke fail to win and Bayern beat Mainz. The biggest story, of course, because the title race has been over for such a long time, effectively, is that Uli Hoeneß will go to prison. You know that. But there have been further revelations, unconfirmed because they come from anonymous sources, people who have tipped off Stern magazine, and said that at times on this account there were up to 400 million euros sloshing around. People trying to understand where that money came from. Are these figures accurate? Apparently Stern also saying that Uli Hoeneß has been keeping this account since 1975. Other Bayern players also implicated with having Swiss bank accounts. Could be former players from the 70s, 80s, we don't know. But there is a sense that the story is not quite yet over. Further digging might dig out further misdemeanors, and it'll really just keep on sort of slowly chipping away at Uli Hoeneß's standing and, by extension, of course, of Bayern's reputation, because while they've never done things completely by the book in the past, they still had a reputation for being very, very serious and very organized and getting things right on and off the pitch. And this now, unfortunately for them, puts them in a different light.
What is the German for follow the money?
Don't know. There is an expression for that. I'm not quite sure.
It soon will be. Right. Okay. Well, that's a bit of a bombshell, isn't it? And any big games we should watch out from the Bundesliga this weekend?
Well, the biggest excitement is at the bottom, which is an area that you're always interested in. I believe. Hamburg are taking on Stuttgart,
right.
And both sides are in real trouble of going down. Hamburg had this great result.
It's right. Another thing I'm interested in going down. Yeah. Go on.
Right. It's all your fault because with all your puns over the years, have poisoned my mind.
Oh, right, okay.
And all I can think of is smutty puns.
Smutty puns, all right. Well, okay, before we go any further with...
Shall we just sum this up?
Okay.
Stuttgart, who are 17th, are hosting Hamburg, who've just had a great win and are up into 14th, but both sides could still conceivably go down, which would be an absolute amazing... result at the end of the year, because Stuttgart haven't been relegated in 26 years. Hamburg have never been relegated. So two very big blue chip clubs in serious trouble.
Mm.
Nuremberg, Freiburg and Braunschweig, the other teams very much up against it. And who was it? I think the Freiburg sporting director said the relegation fight is the new championship.
Right.
And certainly in terms of excitement and openness, he's got a point.
Oh, yeah, fascinating stuff. Okay, brilliant. Next up, Premier League Saturday, Sunday. Now, two games on the Sunday this weekend. That was almost Ray Winston-esque, wasn't it? Nah. Two games on
proper
the...
Proper two.
Yeah.
Sunday.
Have you seen that film, Rafa?
No.
Yeah, okay. No. I just find it extraordinary that so many decades on, they're still referencing that one scene. Anyway, Spurs are taking on Saints... on Sunday, apparently Pochettino's now been linked with the Spurs job, even though they've got a perfectly good manager already. You heard anything about that, Barry?
No, I haven't, actually.
All right. Spurs, of course, are going to be in action on Thursday night in the Europa League, trying to come back from that 3-1 home leg defeat against Benfica, which left Sherwood saying one or two, well, disrespectful things about Jorge Jesus, the Benfica manager. So it's going to be interesting to see how they come into that one. And Saints, well, they've not done that well of late, especially away from home. But we'll see about that one. I mean, the real meaty action comes on Saturday. The other game on the Sunday is Villa Stoke. Oh, well, by the way, I should should mention this. I managed to chop off the name of whoever posted this in. They weren't the only one. But Barry says a poster is absolutely correct to accuse James of Delphism. It's absolutely clear that Fabian Delph meant that goal. He's a very good footballer, and you only need to have played football at a rudimentary level to know that he meant it, given the shape of his body when contacting the ball and his subsequent body language. I have to say that since uttering that infamous remark on Monday, I have gone away and played some football at a rudimentary level, and I now completely accept he meant it. I've also seen some replays, and it's clear that he was trying to do that, and it's a great goal. He was a bit lucky with the bounce. It could have gone the other way. And
but surely it's anti-Delphism they should accuse you of, well, rather than Delphism.
Let's not stir up any further trouble with these angry listeners, who are very much on the warpath. Anyway, Villa Stoke. We'll see what else they can come up with, these crazy Villa guys, as they entertain the ever entertaining Stoke. That's on Sunday. On Saturday, though, there's some red hot relegation scraps. None redder nor hotter, I'm going to suggest, than Norwich Sunderland. Because Norwich, they're not out of danger yet. They're 4 points clear of Sunderland in the bottom three, but they've played two more games than the Black Cats. So this, with Sunderland visiting Norwich at Carrow Road, wow, Barry, I bet you're all fired up about this.
Yeah.
As I thought.
Trying to predict how either team will perform, because they're both so erratic and unpredictable, it's like trying to catch fog in a net.
Right.
Obviously, I hope Sunderland win. Yeah. Am I confident that they will? No.
Do Norwich not have decent home form? They've only conceded one goal at home since the turn of the year.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Well, wow.
Yeah.
And, Sunderland aren't exactly banging them in at the moment, no. So...
Norwich it is, then.
I'll go a draw that's not much use to either.
Norwich, we should mention, have to pile in a bit like a squirrel in autumn, have to get those points in there, the trunk or whatever tree they're nesting in, because the last four games of the season, of course, they're playing, who is it, Arsenal, Chelsea, Bayern Munich and Barcelona or something like that. Right. It's like completely impossible games. So, they're not out of danger, not by a long shot. Everton, Swansea. Now, Swansea could be that side too, you know, the one that is up there looking relatively safe in mid-table, then it comes plummeting into the bottom three to everyone's surprise. They haven't won, is it, 7 or 8 games now under Gary Monk?
Yeah, but what's working in their favour is that there's still a lot of teams below them. Mm. And they would all have to do better than Swansea for them to actually drop. And a lot of them playing each other. So
yeah, I think that's true.
They're fairly safe.
There are 6 teams below them at the moment. Swansea, who are just above Norwich, but equally they're only 4 points clear of Sunderland, who have those games in hand. And they're going to be away at Everton, as I mentioned, which is a very, very tough game. For anybody heading to Goodison Park. Newcastle are hosting Crystal Palace. Newcastle fresh from that disastrous visit to Craven Cottage last weekend, when Loic Rennie's absence was so telling, if you will. And of course, Alan Pardew is still very much bound.
Palace were in the North East last week. They right. played Sunderland,
mm-hmm.
But could only draw 0-0. So yeah, I think while they picked up on the Pulis, I think again, this stage of the season, tension's high, nerves wrangling. I think it could be, you know, to go play Newcastle, I think it might work in their favour. I think Newcastle could get a result.
With Remy, Newcastle have scored 37 goals. In the 7 games without Remy, they've scored how many?
2.
0.
How many with him?
37.
In how many games?
23.
And without him?
None. 0.
And Palace have scored 19 all season in the league. And how many games is that? 29. So that's not very good, is it? I'm bidding unders on that one, Barry. Unders.
Mm. Okay.
What about Hull West Brom, eh? Hull West Brom. Pepe Mel, he's just got his first win with West Brom. Whilst Hull, coming off that defeat at home to Man City, and they won't have George Boyd, whose name is almost an anagram of Boy George. I don't know if you noticed that.
Reverse, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd back City to get a result in this, because I think what happened at the weekend when they played Manchester City was they perhaps couldn't believe the opportunity presented in front of them, that, you know, they had a team down to 10 men. And, yeah, I think they almost kind of froze, if you like, a little bit like me then. So I think, yeah, I think they're the... a team with enough quality about them to stay up and get a result on that.
Who's going to go down? I'm saying Anders. Is Cardiff City, Fulham, and I'm going to go with Norwich. What do you think, Barry?
Poor Norwich.
Yeah, it's a shame that someone's going to go down.
Yeah, I think the Canaries will go down like in a mine, you know.
Right. Rafa, what do you think? You like battles at the bottom. Well, you're not laughing when I say it. This is really unfair, everybody. Barry?
Fulham, Cardiff, and I'll tip Sunderland.
Really?
I'm bound to get it wrong.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Interesting. Jinx.
It's an anti-jinx jinx.
Mm.
I think a season in the Championship wouldn't do Sunderland any harm, to be honest. Get back in the winning swing of things. Yeah. And come straight back up. And I think they would come straight back up. I don't think it'd be... I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Would you not?
No, I mean, fans get sick of seeing their team get beaten week in, week out, losing all the time and not playing particularly well. So
and having to pay more for the privilege.
Go back down, regroup, and I think Gus Poyet is a good enough manager to march them straight back up again.
All right. Okay. Well, that then takes us to the end of today's Football Weekly Extra. A couple of things I should mention before we sign off. One is that it's Max Rushton Ahoy on Monday. Well, I'm off with, Barry?
Burley Lithuanians. Indeed. In Lycra.
Absolutely.
Where are they?
Well, what are you doing for work?
Hey, ba-dum-tish. Yeah,
and their husbands will be out lifting heavy boulders and stuff.
What, while I'm with the Burley Lithuanians? Yeah.
Where is it? What exotic?
It's in Los Angeles.
Ooh.
Yeah. Nice. So that's going to be exciting. And so you'll be with Max on Monday and Thursday.
And I'll be with him on Sunday.
Oh, there you go. On Sunday, lovely. And whereas, James, you're heading off to see, in a second, you're going to go and see who?
Oh, you're going to see Per Mertzak.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Where will you be writing about that?
In the Green Soccer Journal.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's like a fashion football magazine.
And Rafa, you've got loads of things about to happen, which you're too discreet to talk about, so that's terrific. Anyway, the other thing I should say is many, many thanks to everyone in Dublin, Simon Conway for organising it, and all the people who came along and made us feel so very, very welcome. As I mentioned earlier, there is a video on the Guardian website soon, and to tide you over in the meantime, we're going to sign off with a little bit of excerpts from Wednesday night's visit to the Griffiths College, I think, in Dublin.
Griffiths College Conference Centre.
There you go. All right.
Where the highlight of the evening was when we all stopped talking to watch some bloke carry 3 pints in plastic glasses from the door to his seat.
Yep,
and he didn't spill a drop. That's very impressive.
Yep. Make us an offer and we could be coming to your town, hopefully with a man who can carry 3 pints for an evening of entertainment. In the meantime, though, that's it. So have a super week. Thanks to Rafa, James and Barry and producer Ben. Speak to you soon.
Here comes James Richardson, Rafa Honigstein, James Horncastle, and the hometown hero, Barry Glendenning.
Okay, here's a question from Buffon Buffoon. Who's the panel's favourite ever player, on telly, in the flesh, or just plain old man crush? Barry.
You had a man crush on Cavani for many years, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I'm quite fickle. I move around. I think in terms of just brilliance as a player, and he was a one club man, and he was just stunningly gorgeous. It's probably Paolo Maldini.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd happily bring him home to meet your mother. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. James?
I think I have a similar sort of attraction for a one club Italian man, which would be Totti.
Really? Totti? Yeah. I'm just not sure if he'd make a considerate lover.
Well, there's that great sort of clip of him on what was an Italian candid camera show where he goes to a restaurant and there's a waitress there who gets a feather duster out and sort of starts dusting everywhere and all that sort of thing, and he can't keep his eyes off her. And then the whole restaurant empties and she propositions him and he goes for it. He really goes for it. And she gets like flour, because it's Italian restaurant, so they're making pasta and that. Pours flour all over herself, pours flour over her arse and everything like that. And he gets into it. And then, obviously, his teammates come out. And they're like, "Whoa!" And he's like, it's great. Well,
I always had a thing for Lothar Matthäus.
Yeah.
Then I met him.
Now, Mark Byrne taking us on a different tack and asking, why are English clubs doing so badly this season? Rafa.
Oh, this is a very serious topic. Mm. I think, even though it sounds counterintuitive, I think the reason is because the Premier League is actually very good and very strong. By that I mean that the competition at the top is so tough that you don't quite have the resources, the energy, the sense of balance that you need to have these big European adventures, because there's so much trouble at the home front, as it were. I mean, one example would be United having to work really hard to keep Wayne Rooney even at the club. Mm. You wouldn't see that at Bayern, you wouldn't see that at Juventus or Real Madrid, Barcelona. There would never be in any danger of losing their top players.
They're going.
you're losing them.
They're just looking for a different vantage point.
Ah, right, okay.
You wouldn't see that kind of competition for these players. So,
but Chelsea would be the exception to that.
Chelsea are the exception to that because they've got Mourinho, right. And they're also set up, I think, to succeed in Europe in a negative or reactive sense, but nevertheless, they are, I think, the team that nobody wants to play against. Mm.
There's also the draw. I mean, it has to be factored into this, the fact that Man City got Barcelona and Arsenal got Bayern Munich, which is...
But they could both have finished better in their groups and avoided those teams. I mean, I got pelters for saying on a pod recently that I thought it was pretty disgraceful that City not only went out, but didn't seem to mind that much. They thought they'd done okay because they're quite inexperienced in Europe, but they've had three seasons of experience now, and the players they have, and for the money they have spent, I really think they should be doing a lot better.
I have a certain degree of sympathy towards City in the sense that because they hadn't been in Europe, or they hadn't ever been in the Champions League, their coefficient ranking was so low that whenever they did get drawn in a group, it was always going to be one of the hardest groups. I say a certain degree of sympathy because when you've got as much money to spend as they do, then it's no real excuse. As PSG showed, for example, last year when they got to the quarterfinals in their first outing. But because of, you know, they've actually got through the groups for once, their coefficient should be slightly easier. So they should get better draws from now on, having been in Europe for the last 3 years. So they should. You'd expect them to do better.
Yeah, just to come back on it quickly, I think the Premier League doesn't perhaps at the moment have a 10 out of 10 team like some of the others we mentioned, but they have more sort of 7 out of 10 teams than anyone else. So it makes the title race very exciting because there isn't really that dominant team that can beat everybody. But at the same time, perhaps that makes them just a little bit short when it comes to playing against these other sides in Europe.
Right. Okay, now, somewhere out there is a hand and it's a loft.
How's it going?
Very well. Who are you, sir?
My name's Shane.
Hi, Shane.
Out of Europe's top five leagues, who's tactically the best as a country?
Italy. I think I think this is what stands in good stead. I think France Football, for example, published a top 10 of the highest paid managers in the world, and I think was it 7 of the top 10 were Italian. I think one of the reasons for that is the schooling, the education of coaches in Italy. I think they take it extremely seriously. And one of the, you could say, reasons why Serie A has, to some extent, perhaps lost some of its competitiveness is because of the flight of these minds. You know, a lot of...
You're preaching to the converted here because they have had such fantastic experience.
Oh, Trap.
happy birthday, Trap, by the way. Yesterday.
Yeah, it was yesterday.
75th birthday yesterday. In other news.
But, you know, coaches like Capello, Spalletti, Mancini, for example, I think even Mourinho would go on the record as saying that Serie A for him was a challenge every week. It was preparing for a game and being in the game was like a game of chess. And probably made him a better manager. I think he still says that 2 years he had in Serie A was the hardest he had as a coach and was the making of him. And I think that's something that Italy still has going for it.
Well, if I had one of those Gary Neville boards, I would demonstrate which is the best. But in the absence of such a technical device, I can only hark back to, you know, the Ukraine, Valery Lobanovsky, right, Cybermetrics,
yeah.
Everyone knowing what, you know, thinking five moves ahead. I don't really know the answer.
Right, he pioneered Cybermetrics, didn't he?
So, yeah. So I'll just hold a pyramid upside down and be done with it.
That's crazy talk, Barry. Here's a question for you, Rafa. Art Maguire says, is the German league a joke, especially if Draxler joins Lewandowski and going to Bayern? You must be a little bit concerned about this, are you not?
It's a joke, but a lot of people find it very funny.
Huh?
And I might be one of them, hailing from Munich. No, I mean, it is, of course, unhealthy to have this kind of lead. But you have to say that I think you have a tendency in football to look at what's happening right now and then think this is what will be the future, what will happen for the next 3 or 4 years. But in historical terms, Bayern, despite always having the most money for the last 30 years, have always found a way not to win and to implode. And you can see very easily foresee a scenario where Pep, after a couple of years, says, you know what, I've done this now, I'm going somewhere else. And they appoint the wrong manager. And
David Moyes.
Yeah, so it's a very good example, Man United. I mean, people maybe foresaw a transition, but they didn't see them finishing in seventh. So I think it's wise to keep things into perspective. And Bayern's dominance is a freak occurrence because they have a marriage between the best squad, the best finances, and the best manager in European football right now. It's not going to be in the same scenario in a few years' time.
Okay, good. Ruari Burns is trying to stir up trouble. Who would win in a fight, armed or otherwise, the Football Weekly crew or the Football Ramble?
Who?
What do you think, Barry? You've frequented both sets of top professionals.
I think we... Well, it depends. I mean, we...
Do we have a fighter amongst us? I'm certainly not tasty, Barry. I don't know if you can handle yourself. James? Not
no,
with hair
my
like that,
hair
surely.
Always gets pulled, yeah. And then I'm just...
We have a Scouser, Greg.
Oh, yeah, Greg
Bukowski, so. We see, we have a revolving...
If we can have Paul Doyle, can we have Paul Doyle?
If we could have Paul Doyle, Greg Bukowski, say, and
Sean
Ingle.
Ingle does boxing training, yeah.
Yeah, we'd probably beat them.
All right, yeah, good. That's the answer to that question. Daniel Doody with a question for me. How did you usurp Gazza to become Football Italia host? The answer, surprisingly, he didn't turn up. And that's how it happened. Tom Fox, who do the panel think will win the World Cup? Tip, don't say England. Oh, well, in that case, who would you be saying, James? Who would you go for in that case?
To win?
Yeah. Yes or no? Come on now.
Yes.
No, who are you tipping?
Brazil. It's the obvious answer, and probably the right one.
Yeah? Barry, are you going along with that?
No, well, Rafa's pod predictions are notoriously bad.
No, this is not true. This is one of those myths.
It's not a myth.
I mean, I did predict United to beat Barcelona 3-0 in 2009. Yeah. But if they'd performed in the manner that I predicted on the pitch, we wouldn't have seen that result. I mean, who could know that Ferguson would get it so wrong? I had no idea.
Talk about being misrepresented as well, Baz. Weren't you the person who many people believe said Villa would win the title this season?
Yeah.
I did not. I said they would finish ninth. They're currently 10th and set fair to finish ninth. I said, we were talking about this at lunchtime, and I said Chile, and then Rafa...
Was that your order, Barry?
Hey! oh God! I walked into that one. Yeah, and then Rafa pointed out that they're in a very difficult group with the Dutch and who was it?
Well, they could play Brazil the next round.
Yeah, they could play Brazil in the next round, but I still think they could do it. You know, why shouldn't they win a group? The Dutch may well have one of their implosions, and if they win the group, who's to say they won't go on and do very well?
Hmm. All right.
I'd like to see a new winner, and I think Chile or Colombia could be that winner.
All right, Colombia, of course, no Falcao. I don't know if that's an issue. James, who are you plumping for?
If it weren't for the fact that they didn't have a very good... Yeah, well, they have a poor goalkeeper and a poor defence, I'd go with Argentina. But I just think, you know, again, that's too much of a limitation, really.
They have poor goalkeeper and poor defenders.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, they haven't... I mean, Argentina had a tradition of producing fine, rugged, no-nonsense defenders, whereas I think,
Yeah, they still have Martin de Michelis.
But for whatever reason, that's stopped, whereas they produced a glut of attackers, you know, all of which can't be on the same, on the field at the same time unless they've got Diego Maradona as coach.
Right. Excellent. Robbie Dugan asks, what is your dream Champions League final? If you could pick two teams, presumably not just because you support one of them, but who do you think would be the best Champions League final, Rafa?
I would like to see Pep against Pep.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Pep against Mu would be quite interesting, wouldn't it? Or Pep against Latam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All good for me.
Just the two of them oiled up in the centre circle. James?
Yeah, I would like to see Bayern PSG, I think.
Yeah?
I
would be a singularly one-sided game, don't you think? Do you think PSG could match Bayern?
Well, I thought they did a credible performance against Barcelona last year. And I thought, you know, again, in terms of assembling a team with a lot of money very quickly, you know, they took to the Champions League a lot quicker than Manchester City did. And I think, they will be problematic because, you know, they've got the best defender in the world, in my opinion, in Thiago Silva. They've got one of the most balanced midfields out there in Matuidi, Verratti, and Thiago Motta, Rafa's favourite player. And then, of course, they've got Ibra and Cavani. So, I think they will be better for the experience of last year. And the only thing missing, really, from Zlatan's medal collection at club level, at least, is that Champions League trophy. So,
Baz?
I'd like to see PSG in the final as well. I've always been a huge supporter of the French clubs. I admire their backbone, determination to succeed. And Atletico Madrid, maybe. Just because they're doing so well this season, Diego, or Simeone is doing a fine job. And yeah, why not? Why not?
Why not, indeed?
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today. No credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.